What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Big One Podcast. We are on Twitter at Podcast Big One. Emails podcastbigone@gmail.com. This is a weekly motorsports. We are talking NASCAR, IndyCar, Formula One, local racing. We are all over the map, and we've got B-Boy doing the lead-in with BBG. B-Boy, what's up over there?
I did the lead-in. You did the lead-in. I don't know.
Oh, man. Throwing him for a loop here. Throwing him for a loop already. Man.
We're off to a great start. Yeah, my name is B-Boy. I'm here. Going to talk about motorsports. Lots of motorsports to cover. Really fun weekend. Really, really fun weekend in San Diego. And speaking of San Diego, if you're looking to have some fun, I guess they're not only in San Diego, but San Diego, Vegas, northern, up to LA, that kind of thing. Go to Tacos El Gordo. A lot of people know about it. It's a great place. Really, really good tacos. Definitely, I learned of this place because of Vegas for years and years and years. For probably a decade now, I've been going to Tacos El Gordo in Vegas. They've literally moved locations four times. But, you know, when I lived in San Diego, it was hard still not to go because it's just so damn good. You know, you got to get your adobada on. And that's what I do. And that's my favorite. So, Tacos El Gordo, thanks for the sponsor this week. Let's jump into some storylines. Baby G, what's going on?
This is a big one. Dodge could return to the Cup Series in 2027, as recent developments have made this a realistic possibility, reported by The Athletic. So Ram Trucks in the Truck Series this year, fielding those five trucks. And wow, that would be a quick jump over to the Cup Series if they're coming in next season.
I mean, my answer to this is like, no duh. They want to get in as soon as they can. I think the question is how. Right? Like, what's going to be their move? How are they going to get there? And, well, they already have a team that sports their trucks in Rams, right? And that same team doesn't get Chevy support now. They don't get the Chevy notes because they have the trucks in Dodge. So that team probably going to go that way. My question is did this wait to get announced because there's another team that's going to go to Dodge for Cup as well? If Dodge is going to make a serious return, they need to make a bigger splash. This predates you ever watching NASCAR, so I'll give you a history lesson here. When they came into the sport the first time, right around, I think it was the year 2000, I want to say. When they came in, it was a big deal because they came in with Evernham and Bill Elliott's team. And so that was the big splash that they made. And then Penske jumped over as well at the same time. My big question is, obviously, Evernham, like seven team mergers later, is not a team, obviously. But Penske is. What if Penske makes the move? I don't know why they would, because they are the number one Ford team. But then again, Ford's not like been that great of a manufacturer recently. You know, is it better to be the number one team with a manufacturer that's been there for a long time, but is kind of like withdrawing their support a little bit, maybe? Or is it better to be the number one team with the hot new manufacturer? I don't know. Joe Gibbs made that move to Toyota. Worked out pretty fucking well for them. So let's see what happens.
For our fans who are not as informed as we are about NASCAR, what is that team that doesn't get that major support that would potentially switch over to Chevy, or from Chevy to
Dodge? Colleague Racing. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You didn't mention. So we've got a lot of people who are only F1 fans. So we gotta inform them here.
Good call.
Next up on the storylines, TNT Sports has made a change to its NASCAR broadcast this season. Green flag coverage will have two box ad breaks instead of full screen ads. That is a big win for me.
Yeah. That's awesome. What an announcement. I mean, TNT is probably the second best broadcasting group, and TNT NBC, right? And I guess this year, like, all of them are on TNT. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
I mean, I hate the fact that they're not on NBC, but I kind of get it because, I've got other things they want to prioritize, I guess, instead. But, you know, a dedicated place where people can go and watch, and for them to do green flag coverage without any full screen commercials is a big deal. Anything but Fox and these other groups are, I think, trying to catch up to Amazon a little bit, but really, really cool to see. And, you know, I'm really excited for this in-season tournament. I think last year I just, like, forgot that it was going to happen, and we didn't do the podcast and everything. So, like, yeah, it was it kind of like sprung on me. I didn't really pay attention to. I'm excited. Maybe we should fill out brackets. Maybe that would be fun. Send us your brackets. See if you can compete with us. I'll put 20 against you. Let's see what happens.
Jimmy Johnson said that after this weekend at Coronado, he only has one Cup Series race left, that being the 2027 Daytona 500. So, as alluded to last week, Jim Jam drinking the beers down in San Diego. Mm-hmm. He's going to be slinging some Busch Lights down there at the 2027 Daytona 500. Get ready to drink some beers with Jim Jam.
Yeah, he was drinking during the race, too. We'll talk about that one. Cool. That's about right. He's not been competitive since he retired. I mean, literally all of his races since he came back, he's not really been that competitive. I did really like seeing him in the trucks. So I'm glad he specified the Cup race is the one that he's not going to show up to. Because if he wants to do more truck races, I think that's very fitting. I think that's fitting for most of these guys that are kind of like retired, but trying to do some little races here and there. Same with Dale Jr. I think trucks and O'Reilly series are perfect for you. Jump in whenever it makes sense at your favorite racetracks, that kind of thing. I just hope he doesn't wreck the field at the Daytona 500, but I have a feeling with how his races normally go, he will end that race in the garage, just more than likely. I'll put $20 on that one for anyone as well.
Ryan Newman, a.k.a. the Rocket Man, will be driving Woo! The number 25 Colleg Ram truck at the North Wilkesboro race, and my personal speculation on this one is the sponsor of that car going to be SpaceX? For the Rocket Man?
Ooh, that would be pretty sweet, but I doubt it. It's probably Ram, because I think it's been Ram every single time they've had the specialty drivers in the car. But yeah, that's really cool. Newman's definitely, this is exactly what I was saying, he's a retired guy that still wants to race. And when they were doing the, remind me of the series that we went and saw.
SRX?
SRX, when he was doing SRX, very competitive. I don't know if he's been racing kind of outside of that, but we're going to talk about some other retirees getting together to race. But I love seeing Ryan Newman on the track. One fun Ryan Newman fact for you. The guy has an engineering degree from Purdue. He's one of the very few college educated drivers, probably ever. I shouldn't just say like in the field, like just ever. Really, really cool.
Speaking of those legendary drivers, the revived IROC will be part of the Freedom 250 IndyCar weekend in Washington, D.C., with a support race on Saturday. So let's run down some of the names that are going to be in this thing. Jeff Gordon, Kurt Busch, Bobby Labonte, Rusty Wallace, Bill Elliott, Tony Kanaan, Elio Castroneves, and Dario Franchitti. So that's going to be on Saturday, August 22nd, ahead of the IndyCar race around Washington, D.C. on Sunday.
Yeah, really cool. I mean, fuck that race in Washington, and I'm kind of sad that they're affiliating with that. But other than that, really fucking awesome. All these guys have raced IROC in the past, obviously, and getting them back together. Getting Jeff Gordon into a car again is an achievement, I think, in and of itself. I think some of these other guys, Rusty Wallace, I mean, I was going to say Rusty Wallace, but Bill Elliott has got to be the oldest one on the list. But Bill did run SRX, so he's definitely still itching for it. That's really, really cool. Do you know, is this the full list, or are they like?
I have no idea. This is really the initial post that they put out there, initial pump-up announcement, but I'm assuming there's going to be more names that come out in the coming weeks.
Yeah, because Ray Evernham bought IROC, I believe, as a brand and everything, right? And so like he took all the cars and everything. So I'm sure he's affiliated somehow with this. I haven't really read up on it. Love to see Tony Stewart get in a car again. I know he just did earlier this year for the Ram trucks, but would love to see him get into the IROC cars because that's I don't know. For me, when I think of IROC, I actually really think of Tony Stewart. He really, really enjoyed racing those races. So love to see him. There's a couple other guys I think outside of NASCAR that have raced IROC that I would love to see come back as well, which would be really cool. It'd be really cool, by the way, if they run this and it's successful and gets a lot of viewers or whatever. They do just one IROC race per year with current drivers would be fucking sick. It would be so cool. Really gonna put that out there into the universe and hope it happens.
One more storyline. Why don't you read this one for us here?
All right. Does Baby G have a new nickname? Email us. Is it Batty G? Is it Ratchet G? These were workshopped at 12:47 a.m. at a local establishment. Tell us about that local establishment and tell us who workshopped these names.
Yeah, so my friend's birthday was over the weekend, so we did a little get-together on Friday night that was relatively low-key, and then we played some volleyball Saturday morning, and then after you play volleyball at the beach, you really crank it up, and you hit a bar, you hit dinner, and it's last next thing we know, we're downtown here, and it's 12:47 a.m. and we're someone's like, "Who the fuck is Baby G?" I'm like, "I'm Baby G." They're like, "People keep calling somebody Baby G." They're like, "Dude, you're fucking like ratchet over there." I'm like, "What?" Like, I'm like the whitest guy there is in this bar right now. And yeah, then some other guy's ratchet, like, "Damn, you're kind of a baddie over there." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "You've been macking on chicks like all night over there." So I'm like, "Damn, apparently the liquor, like the liquor kicked in and my alter ego came out."
I like Baddie G. Ratchet G, it doesn't fit, in my opinion, at all. Baddie G's pretty fun, though.
I would agree. I would agree. A little bit of fun there at the bar at 12:47 a.m. So I don't think I made it out of there until about 1:30 a.m. So, yeah, we did a little more workshopping, and then we got out of there before things got crazy. You never stay till bar time. You never stay till bar
time. You didn't close it down. Yeah, yeah. I closed down a bar recently. It was the first time in a long time.
Wow. You know, having kids, what time did they close? Like 8:30?
No, it was 2, and it was an arcade bar in San Diego, so it was a good time.
Well done, golf clap here from the Big One Podcast.
Yes, thank you. Speaking of golf claps, let's jump right into Coronado. We were in San Diego racing the Naval Base. If you weren't around for this, it was a really cool event. I think, like, it was a much better event on TV than if you were there, from what I heard. You know, I think we can kind of get into that a little bit, but the TV coverage, you know, across the multiple, 3 different networks have to cover this. The racetrack, the racing, there were hiccups, but overall, man, what an event. What are your thoughts on the event before we get into the individual races?
One word to sum it up is spectacular. It was, it felt like a big time event from the Truck Series on Friday night to the O'Reilly Series on Saturday to the main event, the Cup Series on Sunday. This thing, every network, like you said, Fox, was it on Fox Sports, I believe, for the truck race? I don't remember.
It was FS1.
Mm-hmm. O'Reilly's on CW and then Cup on Amazon Prime. Like, every single broadcast treated it like it was a special event, and it really came off well on TV. I loved it.
Yeah. And, you know, the good thing, because I was going to say, it felt very special and it felt very big. We're both Chicago-y people. We met in Chicago and everything. But, like, Chicago was supposed to be this. Right, it was supposed to have the same grandeur, and in some ways it did. Like, the event and the actual race itself was exciting, and the shots of downtown Chicago and coming over the hill and everything, and SVG winning the first one. Like, that all was really cool for us NASCAR fans. But I think the city didn't really embrace it. It seemed a lot more embraced in San Diego, both from my time there a week before the race happened, as well as just the event, the military personnel that helped put that event on, or were just excited about the fact that it was happening at their base. All the military families, they got to come out, because the truck race was only military families, I believe. And yeah, just overall, I mean, it just looked like just a stupendous event. And by the way, it doesn't rain in San Diego, hardly ever. So like, they could keep racing here and they probably will never, ever have rain delays. One, because it's a street course and they could race in the rain. But two, because it just doesn't. So wonderful sunny skies in Coronado. Let's keep doing this for years to come, as long as the Naval Base is cool with it. I know they got maybe other things they need to be doing, but they also have a $7 trillion budget, I think. $8 trillion maybe now. So I'm sure they can afford it. I think it'll be okay. Cool, let's jump right in. Truck race.
Stage 1 winner Lane Riggs, your Stage 2 winner Parker Klingerman, and Stage 3 race winner was Lane Riggs. Woo. Very, very fun truck race starting this thing off. So Jim Jam, Jimmy Jamming, are we jamming? Question mark.
I think we are jamming.
Johnson was drunk for this race because, man, he was jamming out hard.
He was the right level of drunk. He was the Balmer peaking, if anything. He was driving really, really well. Honestly, before he ran into his issues, like, he was driving fantastic. The best we've seen him since he retired. I loved it. I was watching the race. I was, you know, kind of, you know, as you do when you have a family, you're kind of like doing family stuff and it's on in the background. But I was actively paying attention to it because Jimmy Johnson was doing well. And then we got towards the end of the race and then, well, it got really exciting, but we'll get into that in a second. Both guest driver JMs, that would be Jamie McMurray and...
I didn't watch the race. I was out for my friend's birthday, so I missed this one. Unfortunately, I had to catch the highlights. Justin Marks, right? Okay.
You got it. Justin Marks.
Boom. Brain kicked in there. I was like, you're asking me a question.
I was
going
to say, you pulled that out of your ass. I was going to do it the other way around for what it's worth. I was going to say Justin Marks because it was the harder one, but you got it. Well done. But yeah, they suffered turn 16's wrath, which we learned about in this race. Basically, that final corner is just kind of a tight, high-speed corner, and you can kind of cut it, and you can catch the inside wall and send you up to the outside. That wasn't where the big accident happened the next day, but turn 16 could jump out at you as well. You could just kind of take it with too much speed, not be able to get the car to roll and actually turn, and then you're going to end up in that wall, and they both hit it hard. Jamie hit it really fucking hard, and that ended both their days, but it was cool to see Jamie out there, too. Caden Honeycutt hits the wall a million times. You want to talk about that one? That one's a funny one to have on.
Yeah, this guy, we've been talking about him a lot this season because he's in that number 11 Tricon truck, which is a really fast truck everywhere we go.
And he was your pick.
Yeah, this guy was all over the track, just slapping that wall hard like it was his job, man. It was crazy.
Yeah. He surprised himself by winning his first race at a road course just a month and a half ago. And I think he came out here and was like, I can do this. And that overconfidence had him, by the way, hitting the wall, he wasn't hitting it like Jamie McMurray did. Like, he was just sliding the back end out and catching it here, catching it there. I think he did hit the inside of the wall at one point, really late in the race. But yeah, I think he was just trying to get like a little bit more, and the street course is like the only place where you can't do that. There's not a curb that you hit, right? Like you just hit a wall. And so like, yeah, it's a little bit worse. Didn't really like ruin his day for a long time. It was just something they just kept cutting to, and they were like, Honeycutt hits the wall again. It looks like he's okay. Okay, continue. But it was pretty fun. Ben Rhodes destroys half the field with two to go. Man, yeah, I thought we were shaping up for a pretty awesome finish here. We end up getting a good finish anyway, but I thought we were going to end up with a pretty good finish anyway. And this was wild. Did you see this? Do you want to break it down? Do you want to talk about
it? It's been a minute since I watched the highlights. Okay. So bring us through the end of this thing, because I think you're going to paint the picture well.
Yeah, no worries. Well, anyway, Ben Rhodes gets into the accident. They had just restarted, so they were really bunched up, took out a ton of different trucks, running at high speed right where he had wrecked. And then Caden Honeycutt and Chandler Smith get into a wreck. That one basically gets us to our second green-white checkered. Tyler Reif has a major tire rub, hoping for a caution. But at this point, like, we've had three lead changes in the final lap. So we do a green-white checkered. We get to the final lap. And, shoot, it's been a while for me, too. I don't remember who was leading. I don't remember who was leading, but whoever was leading gets moved up out of the way, and Tyler Reif takes over the lead. And Reif, this would be his first win, I believe, right? And so he's running hard, but he's looking in his rearview mirror because Lane Riggs is by far the fastest truck. Like, he's gonna catch him for sure. And so he's trying to be perfect, and he isn't, and he misses one of the turns at the bus stop. And as it said, he had to take a stop and go penalty right then and there, which just basically gave the win to Lane Riggs. But man, what an exciting final two laps here. And beating and banging too. A lot of beating and banging to not let guys by. Really, really great truck race. Yeah, it was great.
O'Reilly race from Coronado. Stage one winner was Austin Hill. Stage two winner, Taylor Gray, and your stage three and race winner was Austin Hill, a.k.a., we'll get to this at the end, the villain.
The villain, yeah. well, you know, all in all, Austin Hill's never won on a road course. Hell, sometimes he uses the road courses to right hook guys and not get suspended. So, you know, I was, like, kind of happy for him because the guy is, I guess, not anymore going to be a perpetual O'Reilly series guy, but he had been kind of seeming that way. But yeah, definitely wasn't like a super popular win, in my opinion, for him to go out there and get that win. But the race was just like full of holes the whole time. And speaking of holes, the first one popped up on literally the first lap. A manhole cover popped up out of the track, got knocked up by an O'Reilly series car going by and knocked up. And then Corey Day just happened to slam right into it. And that thing sat, the manhole cover sat like right where the radiator is, like went right through the grill and just sat in there. And you could see it so clearly on the CW network. And then they got him in and obviously took it out and threw it on the ground. But they had these things welded down. And this reminds me of Vegas, the first F1 race that they did at Vegas, the street course. Manhole cover came up a little bit different, because I think a manhole cover coming up in NASCAR is probably not going to kill a guy. F1, it could have. But they still needed to go out there, and they needed to make sure all those welds were incredibly tight. I'm sure they re-welded them again before Sunday's race. But you know, this happens. What's really cool about this was, because he ends up three laps down, before the red flag, because they're doing running yellows, and then they're like, guys, we got to check all these. Like, we got to make sure we get this right. So it's a long red flag. They let him work on the car in the red flag. That's not normally allowed. That was nice of them. And then they go, you know what? Give him all his laps back. You know, early in the race, this kind of thing happens. It's the right call. Now, NASCAR has set a precedent on this before. Tracks have come up before. It happened to Jeff Gordon at Martinsville a long time ago, and it happened to Jamie McMurray one time. In fact, I think Jamie might have even commented on it at this in this event. But they've never, ever have done this, where they kind of like gave laps back or did anything of the sort. Now, to give laps back, they let him run under yellow and run those extra laps to do, like, get them back. He wasn't allowed to just miracle into three extra laps. He had to actually run them. But I think this is the right move. What do you think about it?
I do, too. I mean, it's one of those things where it's not a driver error. It's kind of just a, not even an equipment failure error. It's really just like an unforeseen track oddity that happened.
What are they, did they call it? An act of God or whatever?
Yeah, whatever like, they call sort it. Of what yeah, it was. I mean, I think it's the right move. There's no complaints for me. I mean, you have a manhole cover come up and destroy your car. You've got to fix it. Like, I don't think that should be causing you to be three laps down. Doesn't seem right.
Yeah, and by the way, like, Corey Day came back through the field like five or six times in this race to keep coming back and like and competing in this race. And I don't know where he ended up finishing, but I feel like he was top 10. Or at least he was, you know, going into one of those, the final restarts there. So, huge accident to start stage three. Honestly, stage one and two, the red flag and just everything else, they just weren't that exciting. But a huge accident starts stage three, right on the restart. Sam Mayer, in turn four, catches the inside wall hard. Like, he's trying to get that jump where you see the guy and you want to just be another couple inches lower than him. Right, to cut the corner a little bit more than he did, and you can't see in front of the car right in front of you, and so he just kind of cuts it down, slams into the wall, shoots him right to the right across the track, takes literally half the field with him. And he, I don't have the quote here, and so I'm going to see if I can get this as verbatim as I can. He's sitting in the car and he's like distraught, and he's just like, I've got to be the worst driver that's ever done this, or something to that effect. And I get it, but also, like, dude, this has happened to the best of the best. I've seen Cup guys do this plenty of times. I mean, we don't normally get to race around walls that closely, so these street courses are a unique opportunity. But Tyler Reddick did it trying to beat Bowman at Chicagoland in the second year and cost himself a win there. And we'll get to Tyler Reddick's day in a second, but, like, you know, it happens to the best of them, and Meyer doesn't need to beat himself up about this. Sucks that he took out so many cars. I bet that's probably the thing that weighs on him a little bit more here, but it happens. Huge red flag. Long red flag here, bud. But something fun happens, I guess.
Yeah, so because of that hard wreck into the wall, the barriers actually moved, right? These aren't barriers that are, like, fastened down to the ground or anything. If a car hits them at full speed, they're going to move a little bit, and then NASCAR spent the time to get that track tidied up and safe again. And while that was going on, great coverage by the CW. They see a fan jumping the fence, getting on track, and he's literally bent over talking to, was it Sheldon Creed who he was
Sheldon Creed.
Hanging over on his car? Like, just like saying, like, I don't know, he had his hand in there, tried to give, like, Sheldon Creed a fist bump. Eventually the fan, like, comes to his senses, jumps over the fence, so it's like a double-sided fence. You have the catch fence for the track, jumps that first fence, loses his flip-flop, picks it up, like, no, it doesn't even faze him at all. Then he just runs straight to the next fence, jumps that one too, and then, like, walks in the crowd like nobody saw what he did. So he thinks he slipped Rick. He got away with it, you know. There's not cameras anywhere. He just got on the track. He's good to go. And then, like, I think CW either went to commercial or they came back to this later, and they had the camera with the guy arrested by the U.S. Navy Armed Forces. And they actually, before that, caught him coming out of a porta potty. So the cameras, like, had tracked him all the way to a porta potty, held on that, and then he came out, and then they come arrest him. So, man, this guy's not having a good time on the naval base, as fun as he had there.
Yeah, just to be some clarity here, I think it was NCIS that
yes, you are absolutely right, correct, naval police, 100%.
So, which is cool. Maybe that'll show up in an NCIS episode when it gets rebooted. Yeah. But, yeah, the funniest thing I think about this, because they interview Sheldon Creed afterwards, and we're just like, or they didn't interview him. They listened into his radio, and he's like, I have no idea what that guy said. Like, I could not hear what he said at all. But he says a bunch of stuff, probably like, oh, you're my favorite, and they fist bump. And good on Sheldon Creed to just be like, yeah, just,
please go away.
Move on. Yeah. and then, yeah, the flip-flops. My goodness. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think. There's definitely drugs and alcohol or something involved. It's California, so there can be other drugs, too. But like, the mindset, not only to be like, I'm going to climb this fence, and I'm wearing flip-flops. But chain link fences are hard, and you have to get up and over it and then back down. Man, flip-flops? Are you kidding me? That's insane. Glad he got arrested. I have no idea what kind of a penalty that's going to have, but I think jumping fences at naval bases is generally a very, very long sentence. He probably won't get that. But this is not cool. It should not be repeated, but it gave us a bit of a laugh and some brevity to a otherwise like really hard stop and go race. Starting back up, Carson. Thank you. Travis is his dad. Sorry. I'm showing my age again here. Quaffle has a really, really good, lead, is running really, really great with 21 to go. But green flag stops still need to happen. You're gonna have to call out this next one because I didn't.
This one drove me absolutely nuts. So, yeah. Uji, who's a one-off driver in this thing, he's just like he gets kind of into something. He hits the wall or whatever, and then he's just dragging fluid like all over the track. And then instead of him being smart and like just kind of like driving off to the side, like he's literally just dragging this fluid like for blocks and blocks and corners, and then they finally throw a caution, and like they should have just threw the caution right away. I mean, this track is what 3+ miles, so it's hard to be all over this track. And you had a pretty long caution there, cleanup. Like anytime you get fluids on the track, very unsafe, especially at a road course with high speeds like this one. Which we got to talk about how awesome this track was when we get to the Cup race. But this was a very, very fast street course. It made it like a very fun race. So. End of this O'Reilly race, like we said, Austin Hill ends up running to the lead on the last lap, and like you said, his first road course win.
Yeah, really awesome. A couple comments here. Yeah, one, the wide parts of the track where they just had to run and let the body like shift, and they were jumping over the bumps, was just phenomenal. It was so cool to see across all three series. One thing I got to call out about Jesse Awuji, not to keep dropping facts on you, but Jesse Awuji is a former naval officer. That was racing, and he has raced in the past. He's not raced in a number of years, but he has raced in both the truck and the O'Reilly series in the past. Maybe I don't think he's done Cup series. Not that I can remember. He's never been that good, but he literally used to race with the Navy on his car. So that was always something that was pretty cool. I met him actually at the Navy booth one time at a race, which is sweet. But
very cool.
Yeah, this was bad. They shouldn't have let him do that. Take us to the end here.
Yeah, Austin Hill ends up going to the lead on the last lap, and the villain, I believe coined by your better half, calls him the villain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coined a new nickname. I love it.
Just because she saw him and said that, and then he went over and did the donuts like around the eight, and I was like, yeah, so it's because he's took over Kyle Busch's ride, and she was like, oh, well, he was probably waiting for that to happen. And I was like, damn, man, yeah, you really think he's the villain. God, man. She was saying that jokingly, obviously. Cool. Well, let's get into the Cup race, which was, in my opinion, the best race of the weekend. But first off, stage one, Ryan Blaney takes that one. Stage two, Ryan Preece takes that one. And to break up the Ryan party, stage three, first-time winner, our third first-time winner of the year, Corey Heim, and just his 13th start. Baby G's new driver gets his first win.
He is, yeah. I've really liked Corey Heim for a very long time in the truck series. I mean, this is a guy who won like 11 races last year and absolutely dominated. And it's always been this question of, is this guy ever going to get up to the Cup Series, because he's not a big money guy. But my opinion has always been the talent is there. Like, you can just see his racecraft in the Truck Series. Like, he was almost untouchable last year, and I am so happy that he's going to be moving on to 2311 next year. I don't know. They haven't announced a number yet, so we don't know if he's going to be in the 67 or if he's going to go to the 35. It's got to be
67.
Yeah, I think now that he's won, we got to roll with it.
100%. I agree completely. I really hope they do. And anyway, the 35 has never made a lot of sense to me. You know, the 01, if they want to start, like, having the random drivers pop in, yeah, don't be doing that. But they can bring in the 01, or maybe the 89 would be cool too. Yeah, 67 doesn't have to just be for the side rides. Bring in something else. It's not like you had a whole brand around it, like Project 91, right? Or 91. So anyway, first note here, Jimmy is drunk again. He sure is. Guy gets into an incident, a really kind of dumb one, and takes himself, I guess, not out of the race, but, or was he out? I actually don't remember.
No, he wasn't. He just overcooked that one corner and literally went past like five cars going like 30 miles faster, totally missed the chicane and braked his way all the way through it. That was wild.
And then slammed in the tires. Yeah. It sucks, because he is he's from San Diego, right? So like he wanted a race here. That's why he did the trucks and he did the Cup Series, and you want to have a good result for him. But, by the way, we didn't say this earlier, but the fact that he's going to do the Daytona race there, the rumor is that the 84 is going to go to, again, rumor, Riley Herbst, as he moves over to Legacy. So I wonder what Jimmy will run if he races, in the Daytona race next year. So we'll see there. Christopher Bell swaps out for Brent Cruz at the first yellow. Yeah, they announced this before the race started. So basically the way, again, for F1 fans and other folks, the way NASCAR works and has worked for forever is basically if you start a race, you can swap out for a replacement driver at any given point. Literally first lap, you could come in and get the swap out. And any points and any finishing position and all of that will still be rewarded to you because you started the race. And so Christopher Bell starts the race and Brent Cruz gets in at the first yellow. The reason they had to do it at yellow is because even though this is a big track, it takes a second. They had to do some things. They had to, I don't think they did anything to the seat, but they had to put pedal extensions on the pedals and do a couple other things to kind of just make it right for Brent Cruz to be able to get in there. Brent Cruz, by the way, looks like a fucking baby. So it was kind of weird to kind of see him get in there. I know Denny Hamlin says that he's going to be in the 11 in 2 years, but maybe this guy's got to grow up a little bit more first. But we'll get to the rest of his day here in a second. What else happened?
SVG gives a massive fuck you punt to Ryan Preece after Preece really almost ends SVG's day by basically kind of just like dive bombing him and almost spinning him out very early in this race. So SVG was not happy, and he took that spot right back.
Here's my thing on this, actually, is I think SVG went a little hard here, because Ryan Preece did dive bomb 100%, and you know, in F1 and an open wheel, what he did would be very considered being Max Verstappen, I guess, but not nice. And he did dive bomb, but he makes contact with him just the tiniest little bit to be able to get the position, and SVG just repays the favor by actually almost spinning Preece out. He like cuts across his back end and tags him sort of sideways, and honestly Preece held onto the car because it almost ended Preece's day. And I think SVG, you know, if you want to get a guy back, bump him going to the corner. He's on the brakes, he'll survive. Like maybe he spins, but he's not gonna ruin his day, you know. So I actually think he went a little too hard here, but keep going. Bubba's crew, my goodness, what a start for Bubba Wallace in this race. Didn't have a great qualifying position, but really had the speed, ran really really well, got all the way to the top five. And boom, tire comes off just after pitting. This means he has to come in and get held for two laps, which you would think, man, 3 mile course, two laps, that's going to be terrible. Well, there weren't a lot of people a lap down. So eventually he gets these two laps back, you know, by staying out, getting the wave around, that kind of thing. But man, Bubba's crew, got to get that tire on there, man. Honestly, like, no excuse here. It's ridiculous.
Chris Buescher in this thing later in the race, he does literally a 360 spin right in front of the entire field. And I don't know how these guys have the reflexes to just slow down so fast and not just pile into him. That's really the difference between the Truck Series, the O'Reilly Series, and the Cup Series. Like, if a guy does a 360 spin and comes to a full stop on the track, in one of those developmental series, like, you've got a full course pile in, right? They're all piling in there, yeah. But that just shows the skill of these Cup Series drivers. Very, very fun to see that. SVG was right in the mix of that, too. He was right behind Buescher.
Yeah, he was the first one, I think, to avoid him. But I'll say, like, it's a patience thing, right? And so many of the Truck and Xfinity, or sorry, O'Reilly guys, do want to get that tiny bit of advantage by getting it, you know, staying in the gas and punching through like it's Days of Thunder. And these guys just know, live to survive and race the next corner, you know, and you'll get it back. I mean, we talk about it at the Super Speedways on the Big One podcast because it annoys the fuck out of me to watch guys throw a dumb block or just make a bad move when all they need to do is just kind of sit in line and let the momentum build again and they'll get another shot. But the Cup guys do it. The Cup guys know that that's true and they just wait. And they get off the gas and they lose their speed and they know they'll make it up and it'll be okay. And that's why they missed it here. Austin Hill, this is the big event here because it changed the entire trajectory of the race. We're just about halfway through here. Austin Hill misses the corner on a restart and kind of goes. First off, SVG has tried to send it three wide, decides to back out. Austin Hill's on the inside of Connor Zilich. Hill misses the corner, shoots wide, gets into Zilich, sends him into the wall, and then these two pile up, SVG and Zilich, who were looking incredibly good for Trackhouse, and looking like maybe the two that were going to fight this out for a win, both out of the race from this one on. Austin Hill, obviously trying to capitalize on the momentum from the day before, will not. I think he was done as well, and several other drivers in this one as well. Anything to add?
Not really. I mean, the one thing I would add in this race in general is tire wear did matter, and it mattered big time. So at one point, Chris Buescher was on 8-lap older tires in first place, and he ends up falling all the way back to 20th place. So, I mean, it's crazy. Or sorry, that was Priest that was first to outside the top 20 with those old tires. Yeah. So crazy stuff with this tire wear. Would you love to see?
Yeah, and it was... It's because of how high speed and the types of corners that they had, the transitions they had, those wide sweeping corners where you're trying to keep the speed up and you're getting a lot of lateral motion in the car. They talk about at the intermediates and even the short tracks, the tire patch. And what they mean is how much of the tire is in contact with the road. Well, when we went to this next generation of car, we widened the tire, so the tire patch became wider. When that happened, it meant they didn't slide around as much. And when you don't slide around, you don't have as much lateral motion, tires don't degrade. They don't heat up enough, and then therefore they don't degrade. And so you have to bring a softer tire. You have to bring a tire that's going to degrade. And this is the same tire, by the way. They didn't bring anything new here. It's the same tire they've been racing at the other road courses. The only other road course that the tires seem to matter this much is COTA. And because COTA is also a high-speed road course. I don't know if there are other high-speed road courses. I'm just joking. I know two in America that would be really great, but I don't know if there's any other ones in America outside of Road America and Road Atlanta, both very good high-speed courses. That would be good for NASCARs, but NASCAR, I mean, I like the Glen and I like Sonoma, but high-speed tracks are kind of where it's at right now for the road courses.
Makes it more fun, no doubt.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway. What else happened?
Kyle Larson and Corey Heim are kind of the front runners of this race after a lot of this action cycles out. So they both come in and pit at the same time. And shockingly, Larson comes out ahead, as he should, with that Hendrick crew. But Corey Heim does hold serve. He's not all that far behind coming out of that. And then later in this race, this is the big one, Wet Dream. Tyler Reddick ends up driving his way to the front of the field on point. Hostovar actually ends up blowing his wad because he had a great race. He was in second, but young gun Corey Heim, not afraid to mix it up. He kind of got into Hostovar a little bit and spun him to take that position. So Corey Heim was seeing red, and he was ready to do whatever it took to get this win.
Look, there's been a lot of stuff this week coming out about, like, Denny pushing Heim to talk to Hostovar, and Heim being like, Hostovar, have my number. I don't know. We already talked. It's not a big deal. Hostovar doesn't really care. He said it's fine. I mean, he knows.
Yeah, he's got this side of this.
For what it's worth, I think Hostovar also, like, without even having to, like, replay it, he's got really great racecraft. He's a race fan. He's, in some ways, I'd like to say that he's like me because I want to inflate my own ego, but, like, he's just watched so much racing. He understands when he makes mistakes, and he just took that corner so slow to try and like he basically diamonded off the bus stop is what it was. He goes into the bus stop, he's off the gas so that he can get on the gas slightly sooner and get more speed out, which is what you want to do if you're the guy chasing. But he didn't realize that Haim was going to come flying through that bus stop with way faster. Haim closes on him like that, and yeah, Hosovar got the bump. And you know, you get a bump in as unstable of a place as the bus stop here or at Glen or anywhere else, you're going to go around. And so that's what happened. Honestly, it didn't really like, well, I guess it did ruin Hosovar's race because he ended up having to go. He was like in the backpack at that point, right? I don't think he got to get resumed until everyone had passed him. So sucks for him, but yeah, fuck him. I don't care. 45 and 67. It was time for these two to duel it out. Reddick has the lead. He's got a couple seconds, or not actually, I don't think he ever had a second lead. He has a couple, like 0.8 of a second to a second of a lead most of the time. A couple times, Haim gets to about 0.3 behind. He's getting in a position where he could make a lunge or could make a move, and the 45 seems to stretch it out each time. But this continues, you know, starting from like, I think it was like 13 or 14 to go when this started, all the way down to right about 4 to go. And with 5 to go, we're also watching the third place battle. Bubba Wallace is trying to keep Kyle Larson behind because he knows, hey, these other two might compete for a win and might wreck themselves. We've seen it before. Ryan Blaney won at the Charlotte Roval because Jimmy Johnson and Martin Truex wrecked. And, you know, this kind of thing happens. And so he was really kind of playing defense to try and keep this position. Kyle Larson gets by him with 5 to go. But the clash is on up front. Corey Haim and Tyler Reddick get together. This is 2 to go, right?
Yes.
I believe.
Yep.
2 to go. They finally get... Haim gets there. And Reddick, for what it's worth, like, runs very clean, but gets into... I think it was turn 6. Gets into turn 6 and overcooks it a little bit, which we'd seen a couple times before, and gets up into him. Just a car slides up into Haim and sends Haim wide. Now, at this moment... I can't even actually comment for if it was Reddick and another competitor that isn't his teammate, but most competitors gas it up and go, you got to get by me again. And even Hosovar and some other folks were talking about this after the race and said, yeah, no one else would have let that one go. Would have been like, you know, that's your position. Because Reddick was the one leading, and it was Haim's job to get by him. Denny Hamlin, for what it's worth, has a million times thrown a bad block or ran a guy up into the wall just to keep him from getting by him, and probably would have been like, good job, Tyler, if he would have held Corey Haim that way. But Reddick, that's not the kind of racer that he is, and that's a big reason that he is my favorite driver, and he gives Corey Haim the position and then some. Gives him basically like 3 car lengths, just stays out of the gas until Haim has gathered it up, gets going, and then Reddick gets in line behind him. But... And I don't, this wasn't from the contact, right? It just kind of happened. Tyler Reddick's left front tire goes down, basically ruins his race. I think he ends up finishing 25th. But it's Haim time, and Baby G's driver has his first career victory.
Round of applause. Yeah. Well done. Love it. Love to see a young guy get his first win, and this is a special one out there at Naval Base Coronado. So capping off really a fantastic special weekend of racing with what I think is probably a pretty popular driver. New one.
Absolutely. I think so too. I think everyone's very excited to see Corey Haim there. Now, who will they like the fact that he's on a team with Bubba? Who knows? Some folks seem to have an issue with that. But let's not forget that Bubba Wallace does come back, get by Kyle Larson. He finishes 2nd.
Yeah.
His best ever finish on a road course. And again, he had an incredible car. But don't forget the fact that it takes a really good driver to wheel these cars. You can have a great car, but it takes a really good driver to do what he did. He came back from 2 laps down and finished 2nd in this race. It was almost it was the first 23-11 1-2 finish that they've ever had, but it was almost a 1-2-3 23-11 finish, which would have been just kind of nutty. But and don't forget about the fact that I'm already forgetting his name. This is what happens. 35. Riley Herbst.
Riley Herbst.
Riley ties his career best finish in 8th. So really good finish for him as well. So, I was sad. I'm not gonna lie. I was sad. I wanted Reddick to get this one. I just like I wanted Reddick to win in that fucking Jordan car in Chicago, because that would have been fucking awesome. I was sad that he didn't get the San Diego win. I was looking forward to buying that diecast. But as such, I'm going to buy that Heim diecast, because that's really fucking cool, too.
Speaking of cool, right. Where is F1 going next?
Yeah, I'm glad you added this here. I knew it off the top of my head, but I'm glad you added it. Up next, we're going to the Austria GP. It's gonna be a good race. Definitely want to. I know I spoke to this last time. Definitely want to get our resident F1 expert back in here. Hopefully, we can break down some action for you for next week's episode. If you've been waiting for the F1 action, there hasn't been any, so don't worry about that part. But really, really excited to get back here and talk about Ferrari and the resurgence of Lewis Hamilton and just everything that's kind of happening here. It's been a weird season so far, but things are starting to clear up, and we maybe are going to be looking at a little bit more competition for at least second place in the series. But there's a lot of racing left, so we'll see what happens in Austria. Where are we at with IndyCar?
IndyCar, before we get into that, we've got some news, some silly season news here a little bit early for IndyCar. So Meyer-Shank Racing confirms that Felix Rosenqvist will not be returning at the end of the season. So this is the guy who won the Indianapolis 500 this year, probably moving up to a bigger team. And some of the rumors out there are either Arrow McLaren or Andretti. So you win the 500, teams come a-calling.
Yeah. I'd say Andretti's more of like, it is a slightly, it's a slight upgrade, but to put it in NASCAR terms for the NASCAR folks here, that's kind of like going from like RCR to Trackhouse.
Exactly. You know, it's right really now, not like that big of a step up in my middle. Opinion. I really like Meyer-Shank, and I it's unfortunate that they couldn't kind of keep him in the stable there. And it's really, there must be already something. He's probably told them like, hey, I'm going to X, like I'm getting paid 5 times the amount you guys are. Exactly. They'll announce that obviously it's when the other team is ready. Later on this season, but yeah, great for Felix, man. He's got a very young daughter, less than 1 year old, so she was not at the Indy 500 because only, you know, like I said, very young, so that's special, man. He's able to take care of his family with that move.
That's really cool. Yeah, I'm my bet, $20 against anyone else, McLaren. I'm going to say McLaren here.
Yeah, I could say, who's the young guy there that's on the hot seat there? It's not Lundgaard, it's the other guy. He looks like he's literally like 19 years old.
I'll but, look it up. You keep
yeah,
going.
While you look at that, let's get into some racing recap from Road America. So Road America, Northeast Wisconsin, absolutely amazing racetrack. I, again, failed to go there. I am failing, man, hard as an IndyCar fan here. But Road America, Alex Palou, as he does on the road courses, he is on the pole. And I immediately go, this thing might already be over before it starts.
Yeah, I definitely thought it was going to go that way. By the way, Nolan Siegel is the name that you were looking for.
There you go. Yeah, he's on the hot seat big time. Yeah, so Roman Grosjean loses a tire in this thing, which doesn't happen all that often in IndyCar, but first stint, he loses a tire, just really shakes up the running order, which was fantastic because Alex Palou was running away, but this causes a caution, and a lot of people come in, you know, pit cycle out, shakes things up a little bit. And really shaking things up, Mr. Perfect, Alex Palou, he has a speeding penalty. So that's a pass-through on this 4.2, I think, mile road course. He is buried back in the field. So really big opportunity for the rest of the drivers. And with that opportunity comes an even bigger opportunity. So Christian Rasmussen loses power. Road America has this really long straight. It's actually called the Road America straight. So coming off of turn 14, coming up the hill into turn one, you go uphill and then you kind of go downhill, and it's kind of a blind downhill. And this car was clearly out of power going up the hill, and all the lead cars, you've got to dive to pit road, right? You know, a caution is coming out. Get your ass in there, get your cycle done. And they did not. And that puts Alex Palou right back in this thing. So like the unforced errors in IndyCar just fucking blows my mind. Like Palou gives you an opportunity to get back into the championship window in like five cars, just completely throw it away.
Absolutely. Yeah. You've got it. You're saying it dead on, which is basically like if the king makes a mistake, you got to pounce on it. We saw the same sort of thing. I know SVG ended up getting wrecked out, but we saw it in the cup race too, where SVG, I think I messaged you and say SVG bleeds, because he got the lead and then got ran down again. And I think, like, when you see that, you got to take advantage. Like, you got to run this guy a little bit harder. You got to do, and you see him make a mistake, you got to just pounce on it. And this is just bad racecraft.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got a lot of notes here, but let's just cut to the chase. I mean, you get to the end of this race, and Armstrong loses an engine with four to go. So another power issue. The previous power issue for Christian Rasmussen was the hybrid. And when this hybrid system that the teams don't even own, they physically have to rent this thing from IndyCar. Mm. Like, this is a total piece of shit. It's a complete failure. When the hybrid system goes out, they literally cannot fix it and restart the car. Like, you're literally just out of the race. Total garbage. But Armstrong did have his engine just blow. So Christian Lundgaard then to P1. Full course caution. And Fox, as they do, with three to go, they are going full course, or full screen, excuse me, commercials, which is completely unacceptable. In that situation, they should be breaking down the strategy, who's where, but nope, they're showing me some bullshit insurance ads. So two to go, restart. Christian Lundgaard wins after Graham Rahal makes an absolutely ridiculous move on Will Power in a braking zone trying to defend for the podium. Totally wipes himself out, ruins Power's day. And full course yellow on the last lap, Christian Lundgaard wins at Road America. So with all that being said, Plow somehow scratches and claws his way all the way back to fourth, which is a disaster for the rest of the field. Yeah. An absolute disaster.
Yep. Like we said, had the chance to pounce, get a lot of really good points day for a lot of them, and then ruin that. By the way, I had to look this up because I used to work for BorgWarner a long, long, long time ago, and BorgWarner is well known in IndyCar as the producer of the turbochargers. Actually, we made the IndyCar turbochargers in the plant that I worked in, which was cool. But they are also the BorgWarner Cup is what they give at the Indy 500 because of they produce a number of other pieces for IndyCars. I had to make sure it wasn't BorgWarner. It is not. The hybrid system is made by MPEL. Honda Racing, and the batteries are supplied by Skeleton Technologies. So, not BorgWarner, all good here.
We don't talk about the IndyCar standings a whole lot, but in this thing, it still is a race. So, I am very happy to see that there's basically four guys in contention at this point. Alex Palou has 374 points in the lead. Then we've got David Lucas, 60 points behind with 314. 1 point behind that, Kyle Kirkwood, and then a little bit behind with 297, Christian Lundgaard. So all four of these guys are still in the contention, but man, what a missed opportunity to really knock Palou down a peg and really tighten this thing up. So yeah, very good race at Road America. I am, you know, sad I didn't go again this year, but I am waiting to go when I actually have a wide open weekend where I can go there and camp. I had I had a birthday party on Friday, then I had a family event, unfortunately, on Saturday of the sad kind, and then a party on Saturday evening, and then I was, you know, ratchet G out at the bar at 12:47 a.m., was not going to wake up and drive to Road America at like 5 a.m. to get up there and get in the track. So one of these years I'll get there and I'll do it right. Maybe we have a big one meetup out there or something, so...
That'd be cool. Yeah, that'd be cool. I don't blame you at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful, beautiful track from what I've heard. Up next on the IndyCar schedule, the Honda 200 at Mid-Ohio on Sunday, July 5th. So, yeah.
Nice.
We're rolling. IndyCar's rolling.
Yeah, off this week.
Off this week. Up, yeah, July 4th weekend on Sunday at Mid-Ohio, which is what they do every 4th of July weekend out there.
Nice. Awesome. Well, where are we going for NASCAR this weekend?
We are going to wine country, hitting one of those slower road courses in Sonoma. The O'Reilly Series is the Pit Boss / Food Max 250 at 5:30 Eastern. And on Sunday, the Cup Series Toyota / Save Mart 350 at 3:30 Eastern. And Baby G plus the family plus some friends, we're hitting the track. And it is one of our most loyal listeners, Judge G's first NASCAR race. And I actually asked if this is her first motorsports race ever, and she said yes. So I'm not giving her any tips or intel. Like, we're literally just driving to the track from the house and rolling in there, and she's going to have no clue what's about to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, Sonoma's a lot of fun for a lot of other reasons, too. So it's a great place to kind of go and visit, and I know you got family out there, so that's going to be really great. You said slower track. I want to clarify. It's a great track. I mean, they've been racing here for 30, 40 years at this point. I knew it as Sears Point, definitely, when I first started watching, and it was nice to see Jeff Gordon always winning here. But it is a fun track. I mean, it's like driving through the hills of California. It is a really quintessential California type of experience as a racetrack. And then, you know, the S's are the fun part. And then you get down into that wild turn 12 where anything can happen. We saw Tony Stewart get his final win of his career there, shooting in and bumping someone out of the way as he needed to do. Crazy shit happens here. And I'm excited to see it. You know, same sort of thing. Everyone's going to be hunting SVG. But, you know, just like we saw this past weekend, all it takes is one guy to overshoot turn 12 and could take him out, right? I'm excited because 2311 really is good at these road courses. And they're going to, I think it's a 2311 versus Trackhouse type of weekend. And excited to see who's gonna prevail.
Yeah, I did not mean a slow track. It's just not one of those high speed, high tire high tracks. Speed yeah, yes, it's a very fun track. So our seats this year, last time I went, we had seats up in the main grandstand. So that, in my opinion, wasn't the greatest viewing at this track because you couldn't really see the backside of the track. You couldn't see the S's at all.
The hill's right next to you, so you can only
exactly,
see so far
yeah.
up the hill.
You can kind of see them come down the backstretch, make that turn 12. Then they gun right past you, which is really cool. But then you just lose them up after that first up and over. Then they're over the hill and they're gone. So this year, we're just to the left of that. We're up on the hill in that first kind of heavy corner where you see them come up there. You can see the whole back of the track. We're
nice.
Right there, beautiful view of the track. So we got six tickets comped from NASCAR Fan Rewards, which is great.
Nice.
And then we just got to pick up one additional ticket for one more person. So we actually got more people that want to go than we have tickets, which is always good
to
see.
Is it GA up there? Like
no, it's not GA. We have assigned seating.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yep. Okay, so you got to pick up the one extra ticket, hopefully nearby. Gotcha.
Yeah, we'll probably just pick up a GA and we'll squeeze one in because it's in that concrete kind of seating, so there's plenty of space out there.
For sure.
Previous winners, 2025 SVG, 2024 Kyle Larson. I saw that one in person. Very cool. And 2023 was Martin Truex Jr. So, yeah, like you said, looking forward to hopefully a 2311 win. That would be amazing.
Yeah. Is Corey Heim back in the car this week?
I do not think he is. I saw the cup listing come out, and there were no additional outside of the regular charters on Bob Pockrass's tweet.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a shame.
Yeah,
but,
they should have just threw him in that thing. The car's already out there. Run it back.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, it's time for Baby G Reads the Standings. Let's get through this.
All right, Tyler Reddick in first place, 716 points. Closing the gap in second, Denny Hamlin, 8 points back. Then a whopping 133 back, Ryan Blaney in third. Kyle Larson in fourth, Ty Gibbs in fifth. Then we've got Chase Elliott, Chris Buescher, Daniel Suarez, Carson Hocevar in eighth. Briscoe in 10th, Bubba Wallace up two positions in 11th with that good drive out there at Coronado. Then we got Christopher Bell, William Byron, Eric Jones, Austin Cindric, and in the final chase spot, Ryan Preece, just outside Shane Van Gisbergen since he could not stack those points at Coronado.
He could not. We talked about the fact that we expect him to kind of move his way in. Ryan Preece had a really, really great race, actually, and he got some good stage points out there. By the way, the RFK strategy at Coronado was really interesting, because they got stage points and they kind of ran long, and like had things broken their way, they would have been potentially the guys to beat with Buescher and Ryan Preece. I honestly don't have no clue where Brad Keselowski was. I think he got caught up in an accident later on, but he was not running well. Tyler Reddick, man, that tire going down was literally like a 26-point swing, I think.
Big.
So it would have been nice to be 34 points up instead of just 8 points up. But yeah, two-horse race really looking for towards the end of the season, unless someone else goes on a Denny Hamlin-type tear. I'll say the way that the tracks line up from here on, it's a dead heat. I mean, I just like, yeah, you look at the road courses that are here that they get to go to, and then you look at the intermediates, and you look at like Michigan, and you look at like, you know, some of those kind of tracks, it really could go either way here. I don't know who to pick out. Again, good day for Chris Buescher. Really good day for Daniel Suarez. He ended up fading towards the end, so he didn't actually make much different or much additional points up on Carson Hocevar, his teammate. But those two looking phenomenal. Thought the 71 was going to have a better day. Michael McDowell's really good at road courses, but maybe he'll bounce back at Sonoma. He's down a position, down to 21st. AJ Allmendinger also just had some troubles during the day. Looking for him to kind of move up. And excited for the rest of this race, or rest of this season, and this racing here at Sonoma this weekend, even though I can't be there.
I got one call out in this one. I'm gonna give you the guy's name and let me know what you think of him. Noah Gregson down there in 29th. What do you think of him and his interaction with Kevin Magnussen post-race?
Yeah, I'm glad you actually brought that up, because I forgot that this pisses me off. I have so much to say. First off, we've already talked about Noah. I've made my opinion incredibly clear. Noah should be racing in O'Reilly or the trucks and stay there. He can be a lifer there, and he'd be very competitive. And that's, you know, where his fan base can really enjoy him the most. I don't think Noah is really enjoying his time in the Cup Series since he got here. And I think he should probably get out of here. That all said, and I guess this maybe biases my opinion a little bit, Kevin Magnussen being in the race was really cool. He raced a pretty reasonable race. Kevin Magnussen is well known for being a tough guy to pass and to race against in F1. And he kind of lived up to it. Now, that said, when I saw the incident, I said, Kevin definitely dumped Noah. Like, what is he even doing here? But when you look back at it, Noah was dogging him, blocking him, dogging him for laps and laps and laps and laps. And in F1, that's, you know, it's open wheel, so they have different rules. But if you block that many times on a guy, like, you can literally get penalized. It's definitely a gentleman's agreement for the most part, but you can literally get penalized. And Kevin's got to be sitting there thinking, like, where's the penalty? Oh yeah, I have a chrome horn. That's what I'm supposed to be using. I dish out my own penalties here. And he gave Noah a really long leash. I was actually disappointed to see that Denny Hamlin in his podcast said that Kevin Magnussen deserves to give Noah Gregson more credit since he's a full-timer. Yeah, he's a shitty full-timer that's blocking a guy that's trying to do a one-off event, but is racing a better race than you? Fucking deal with it. Get over it. I don't know what to tell you, Noah, but you did that to yourself. And they say that to, if it had been Noah and Austin Dillon, or literally anyone else, I'm just saying Austin Dillon because he's next to him in points, but literally anyone else, you would never blame the other guy for punting Noah. And Noah wouldn't blame them either. So Noah was taking advantage of the fact that this guy doesn't race in the series. And that's bullshit too. So, yeah. I hate it. I'm mad.
I would agree. Yeah, I had to get you a little bit riled up there at the end. So what do you say? Let's wrap this one up with a little bit of a shout out here. So Twitter at @podcastbigone, emails podcastbigone@gmail.com. If you are in Sonoma, hit us up on Twitter. We might try to do a little something. But
get a pizza.
If not, we're going to be up at the cocktail bar at some point up on Sears Point Hill. There's a nice little cocktail bar up there up near Earnhardt Terrace. We'll be hanging around in the shade at some point because UV's looking high, temps are looking hot, and we're going to have some hot racing out there. So what do you say? Let's call it here on the Big One Podcast. This has been Baby G.
It's been B-Boy. Yeah, don't forget, California sun, high UV. I think it's always rated in the extreme territory.
Oh, yeah, we're looking at 10, baby. We are high as a kite out there in California.
Nice, that'll be fun. All right, see y'all.